Okay. Is there an extra sheet for little old me? An extra sheet for little old me. Thank you. Thank you. You get a sheet also. Okay. First of all, before we start, we want to welcome our guests. Let's give a big gush round of applause for our Manchester guests. Jake and Rafi are here. Okay, a little Manchester gush contingent. Very good. They're very nice. Okay. We're trying to weave some Manchester. Let's see. Okay. So Avraham's life and Avraham's career is very, very neatly packaged. And that package logically should unfold across two parshios. We talked about it 2 weeks ago, the pre-bris man named Avram and the post-bris man named Avraham. The man of Lech Lecha, who was successful but had hiccups here and there and mistakes, and Chazal take him to task. And then the Avraham Avinu, who's absolutely stellar and immaculate in Parshas Vayera. The Avraham who doesn't intervene that quickly in Lech Lecha, and the one who rallies to prevent people from dying even though they're sinners in Vayera. And just in case you're not paying attention, there's an inclusion, there's brackets, there's bookends. It begins with Lech Lecha, and it ends with Lech Lecha. His career begins with the departure, and it ends with that last final challenge to walk up the mountain. And it should all end in Parshas Vayera, because there's really nothing left to talk about. What happens in Chayei Sarah? Excuse me for saying it, because I'm going to flip this, but right now it seems nothing from nothing. Nothing dramatic. No angels, a lot of angels in Vayera. No kings, a lot of kings in Lech Lecha. No conflicts, no one's dying, no one's barren, nothing. It's all just very plain and very pedestrian. Yitzchak needs a wife, Sarah needs to be buried, Avram takes another wife, a few more children are born, he dies, he's buried. If you're asking me, this parsha could be written in about 3 psukim, max. So it's really strange that the Torah elaborates with such verbosity. I don't have a chumash in front of me. 50 psukim about Eliezer? You want to do a fact check on me? How many psukim does this whole Eliezer business take?
It's
like 65. Thanks, just Moshe. 65 psukim? About a shidduch? Today going to J-Day. You just swipe left. It's right. 60 psukim for a shidduch. I don't want to hear about the shidduch crisis anymore. Our shidduch crisis. You think we have a shidduch crisis? Hashem had to write 60 psukim for the shidduch. Why so much? So Chazal noted this. Yafas yichasam shalav de'avos mitarasam shalbanim. Hashem loves the avos so much that even their affiliates, the Eliezers, the Avadim, get a lot of airtime. We're learning Cheskas Abadim. We're learning Bava Basa. How many psukim have we learned in Gemara this year? We're learning Cheskas Abadim for a month. And the only pasuk we've smelled, that we've whiffed, is Shara Mu'ad. And that's according to Hol Chayusha. If you're not Hol Chayusha, there's no Shara Mu'ad. So the entire Masechtos that are built on no psukim, and this whole story, this whole song and dance about camels that takes up 65 psukim, Moshe, thank you. Come on, if you're scripting Avram's life, what better final scene than the Akiva? Crowning achievement. Up on the mountain, sun setting, Yitzchak's neck is taut, got that knife glistening in the sun, he's bound, he's about to pull the trigger, Malach comes down, nothing more dramatic, stop, okay, Ram, fine, take it. Credits. That's the way I would end the movie. Who plays Avram, who plays Yitzchak, who plays the Ram? We can assure you that no animal cruelty, no credits. I mean, this is bizarre. It's so deflating. It's not the way to end the career of Avraham Avinu. It should end with the climax. It should end with the scene. It should end with the inclusion. Lech Lecha, Lech Lecha. Leave, up the mountain. Nisayon, in fact, according to many Rishonim, the Akedah is the final Nisayon. So all of Chayei Sarah is not just humdrum and pedestrian and, quite frankly, a little boring, but it's also post-Nisayon. It's also out of the context, out of the framework of this Ten Nisayon foundation, bracket of Avram's life. in Avram's career. What's happening in Chaya Sarah? Yes, Elijah.
But wouldn't the fact that Avram just thought he was dealt with the assignment of the Al-Qaeda and coming down to see that Sarah die, wouldn't that be an assignment itself?
So let's talk about a little bit more grand. Not just a specific point telescopically, but grand. But you're picking up on something, Elijah. So Chazal sends this. And Chazal provides him with a hint for this solution. Because when Avram eulogizes and buries Sarah, the Torah describes him as arriving. Vayavo Avraham lispod l'Sarah v'livkota. He's traveling. So the Medrash asks, where's he coming from? Source number one. Vayavo Avraham lispod l'Sarah mehechem ba. Where's he coming from? So Rav Levi has his pshat. We're not going to talk about Rav Levi's pshat right now. We're going to focus on Rav Yossi's pshat. The more famous pshat. Line number three. Ela mehechem ba. Where's he traveling from? Mehara Maria. He's traveling from Yerushalayim, right along the Gush Road, and all the traffic. Umesa Sara, Me'asa Tsar. Sara was living around here. She was living in the Gush. She was living near Chev. She was living somewhere in this area. Avram's in Yerushalayim. He hears about Sara's death. He goes to retrieve her body, then to bury her somewhere in Chevron. Mesa Sara, Me'asa Tsar. She had a heart attack. She passed from pain. Lefikach nismcha akeda leviyahayichai sarah. Therefore, the juxtaposition. So vayavar Avram lispod l'sarah v'liv kota. He's arriving from the akeda to bury Sarah. Now, why is this important? Why is the Torah winking at us? Why is Torah even have to write this? People always come from some location. I just came from Hebron, but okay, maybe it's important because it's Hebron chai sarah. But tomorrow, I'm going to write at yeshiva mirtz Hashem be'ezus Hashem from my home. I'm not going to say I just came from my home. People travel. People come from one location to another. It's all fine. Why is Torah stressed by Avraham and wink at us, at least according to Rabbi Yossi, that he comes from Har Moriah? So now we have two questions. One is a global question of Elijah, one is a specific question. One is globally, what does Chaya Sarah add to the career of Avraham? Two is telescopically, why is it important to know where he's arriving from? And the answer is as follows. Every person of ambition and every hero and every person that dedicates their lives to the public welfare, to live a life of idealism, to live a life of mission, to live a life of dedication, to live a life of phones that keep going off and I sit down my phone and my watch and my earpiece. And every person that lives that type of life always faces the following conflict. How to calibrate and balance between the public calling and dedication to history, to people, beyond, and your own family, and your own wife, and your own children. And there's no solution to that. Because you could be Avraham Avinu, and you can't escape that conflict. Because you can only be in one place at one time. You can't be in two places at one time. And the death of Sarah is a microcosm for the conflict that Avraham lives. Because where should Avraham be when Sarah dies? At her bedside, caressing her, comforting her, easing her transition. That's where he should be. But where is he when she dies? Making history. Reshaping the Jewish realm. One of the most epic, heroic moments ever known to man. I said, where should he be? How could he be at two places at once? He wants to be at two places at once. So right at the juncture between Vayera and Chayesara, the Torah is reminding us that Avram lost out through no fault of his own. He could be Avraham Avinu, he could be a Malach HaShareis, but he can't be in two places at once. Even Malachim can't be in two places at once. Different Malachim. And that's the challenge that Avraham faces. He's been so dedicated to be the Avraham Ongoyim for so long. But it's come at a cost. At the very least, simmering tensions between Hagar and Ishmael, two rounds of simmering tensions, because presumably, when he could be available to resolve the tensions and to reconcile the two wives and to create order between the two, he can't be because he's busy with Stom and he's busy with the kings and he's busy with the Malach and he's busy with Abimelech, as he should be, because that's his calling. There's no fault here, there's no flaw, but it's just a fundamental dilemma at the core of human identity. How should I invest my time? I hope that every single one of you comes out of this yeshiva infected by the gush bug. What's the gush bug? I want to try to change the world. It's not enough just to... It has to start with Torah. It has to start with Mitzvah. It has to start with the Yerushalayim. And if that foundation isn't solid, forget any bugs, forget any missions, forget any agendas. It has to start with waking up every morning for davening, working on your midos, your Hashemayim, Shemiras HaMitzvos. Hashem's expectations. I was speaking to our guest, again, a little Manchestering. So the last three Rabbanim in your shul have all been people that sat in this room. Rabbi Kantorovich, Rabbi Atlas, and Rabbi Bank, they all sat in this room. I don't know, they got the Manchester. You got to get a little love, a little jokes. So Avram has this great calling, Avram Ongoyim, but it's come at a cost. And that cost to his private life is distilled by the Akedah dilemma. That he's at the Akedah, but he's not there with Sarah. He has to arrive late, he misses Sarah, and he has to bury her. And Parshas Chayesara is about Avram evening out the tables. No angels, no kings, no drama, no prophecy. Hashem doesn't speak to him. No conversations, no covenants, no promises, no stars, no sand, no dirt, no cholayam, no afar arts, no kofeshim, nothing, nothing. It's just domestic Avram. And can you be as committed to your family, to burying your wife, to eulogizing your wife, to getting down and dirty and rolling up your sleeves and just buying land for your wife so that you can bury her? It's hard. It's a very protracted story. This is not the miraculous, supernatural, here I am, I'm Avram Avinu, oh, take our land, Avram. There are three rounds of negotiations. And each round is more painful than the last. And everyone says, sure, we'll give you the land, but then they realize these are empty promises because a real mafioso in town is named Ephraim. Until you speak to him, nothing moves. And if you care about your family as much as, well, it's one thing to go through negotiations and jump through hoops and ladders when it's the Akedah, when it's stone, when it's the bris, but this is just during my wife, so maybe give up and put it under some tree. But it's your wife. And can you show the same dedication and persistence and tenacity and courage about something which is less public and less epic, just being a good husband? Now it's time for your son to take a wife. It's been hard because the locals aren't exactly such good shidduch opportunities. So he said, okay, whatever, marry best he can. I'll make a compromise. But he casts his vision far and he sees that there are better choices, hundreds of kilometers away, but he can't travel. He's too ill and infirm. So he dispatches his trust. I mean, the whole house, home economics shut down when Elias was gone. Imagine Avram's eating TV dinners. You guys know what TV dinners are? People only see TVs. Prefabbed, you know, airplane meal. I've known airplane meals for a couple. He's eating pasta. Because Eliezer's gone and the house grinds to a halt. But it's more important. It's more important if he's looking at the proper shidduch. He really invests in it. He calls in and he says, take a shavua and please. He demands and he pleads with him. And to a degree, guys, if you look in between the lines, this isn't just the shidduch. This is also Avram reconnecting with his family. Doesn't send Eliezer to Mitzrayim. He sends Eliezer back ki'im el artzi ve'el ma'olat etiti te'lech. What does that sound like? El artzi ve'el ma'olat etiti. Those words sound familiar? Lech lecha, mi'artzecha, mi'molatcha. You have to leave, because you have to leave sometimes to move forward in life, as I spoke about Friday night. You can't carry all your baggage in life. You got to move forward sometimes. You got to leave your past to find the future. But you don't snub your past. You don't forsake your past. Sometimes you leave, then you come back and try to. A lot of people, when they're in yeshiva, they face the following question. Maybe I should join the Haredi community, which is part of that community. And you know what? If you're not asking that question, you're not really growing. Why not? Remember, don't ever use the term about anyone but yourself. This is a term I hate. I've got 10 pet peeves, terms that I never use because they're mind traps. You use the term, you're trapping yourself. I never use the term ultra-Orthodox to describe anyone else but myself. Because every single one of you has a responsibility to be ultra-Orthodox. And if you think the Haredi world is more ultra-Orthodox than this world, which is fine because everyone is a different flavor, then go join it. And if you don't, you're a coward. And you're not invested in religion because every person has responsibility to be as firm as they can. I feel this is my ultra-Orthodoxy. This is the most ideal way to be an Oved Hashem that I found for myself. So I'm like kids all the time. You want to become a Haredi, I'll drive you to Panavish. If you become not firm, I'll cry brokenhearted. So Avram is returning home. So I join the Haredi community. Well, sometimes I'll ask a boy, well, you're really firm and you're learning well and you're growing. Maybe Hashem put you into this world because he wants you to stay in this world. Maybe go away to Yeshiva for a couple of years and if you learn it, maybe go back and try to give something and try to be a rabbi and try to contribute. So Avram is reconnecting with his family. And to be honest, those of you who want a little plug for my Rashi shiur tomorrow, you may not know that on Thursdays we learn Rashi for 10 minutes after davening. I'm going to show you how Basil and Lavan learn from Avram. They don't just receive his trinkets and his gold. They actually learn from Avram. They learn from Eliezer. A lot to learn. So Avram's not just reconnecting with his wife and his son. And then the end of the parasha becomes even more boring. Because now Yitzchak has a wife, and then the only action we see before Avram dies is he marries another woman. But you know what? This decision, as boring and as simple and as ordinary as it seems, is responsible for about 2 billion people on the face of this planet. Because he marries Keturah, and they become the people who populate the Far East. Next time you see an Asian person, oh, that's probably a Keturah descendant. So one simple choice to just marry a woman populates the world with close to half of its population and all your cell phones. Those are your Samsung cell phones. If you have Apple, you know, it's different. You have the Eitz Hadas phones. I don't use Eitz Hadas phones. I use Samsung phones. Although we all know the Eitz Hadas was an Apple, so don't worry. I'm opposed to it on that grounds alone. I want Eitz Hadas, forbidden fruit. I use Samsung. I use Keturah phones. Okay? All I'm done in two different types of phones. You don't call it Apple and Samsung, you call it Eitz Hadas and Keturah. Make your choice. That's the heroism of Avram, and without that third chapter, his life would be imbalanced. Because all you'd see is the Avram of Har Moriah, and the Avram of Malachim, and the Avram of Visitations, and the Avram of Prophecy, and the Avram of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you wouldn't see the father, husband, family member, burial plot negotiator, Shidduch warrior, Adon of Eliezer. That's the balancing of Avram. That's why the parasha is called. Look at how boring the name is. Lach Lecha, so dramatic, departure. It's not the name of a rock band or of an album. And the next word, Vayera, encounter with Hashem. All these are one word, powerful bursts. And then the third chapter of the trilogy, let's make believe it's a sequel to the sequel, the third chapter of Star Wars, the life of Sarah. You're not breaking any box office records with that title. Go back to the drawing board, you've got a better title, the life of Sarah. She isn't even alive. She's dead by the time the parsha begins. It's a metaphor. The life of Sarah is the pedestrian family part of Avram. Not the departure, and not the encounter, not the revelation, but the life of his wife and his children. So everyone, please listen carefully. Here's the Chayesara challenge in your life. I'm looking out at all of you, some of you, and I'm seeing future leaders. I'm seeing future barn busters. People are going to try, change the world, bring the talent. Hashem gave you talent. He wants you to use the talent. He wants you to be humble. He wants you to be modest. He wants you to know it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He doesn't want you to shut it down to suppress it. He wants you to change this world for tomorrow. I'll talk about it next week. Esav just can't see. Tomorrow he's too busy with today. How will the Torah world? Let's just start with the Torah world, okay? Because we have a lot to do internally. How will our Jewish Torah world, our Jewish Torah Israel world, okay? There was once an English boy, Nick Funnison, born in London, who took my advice like 20 years ago. He wanted to try to teach the Gentiles Noahide laws. He became an expert in Noahide laws. I don't know if he was in Manchester. Probably was. Noahide laws. Things start at home. Start basic. How can we change Torah? How can you raise your children so that when they come to yeshiva at age of 17, how can you create a community that won't be busted in their chops just to read three lines of Gemara? They'll read it as quickly as you guys can read the sports pages or the internet. Just because you'll create yeshivos and communities suffused with Torah, serious davening, serious avodas Hashem. How can you make that change? How can you change the world of Israel? See, all, and that requires dedication, and that requires mission, and that requires commitment. But then you have your family, and your wife, and your children. And those are much quieter challenges because no one's watching. You're not winning any awards. And there's no adulation. It's always easier and more enticing to excel in the public sphere where people notice and people compliment you and give you positive feedback and self-esteem. But at home, you're just a nobody. You're a shmegegi. You're nothing. No one's a hero to their wife and to their children. You're a hero for taking out the garbage. You're nothing. The masks you wear in public come off in private. You guys know, right? You guys see your parents as adults. When you were 13 and 12, you saw your parents as a child. Now you see them as young adults, and you know who they really are. So it's important in parental relationships to make yourself as real as possible, as quickly as possible. If you perpetuate the myth in your children's eyes that you're perfect, that relationship will fizzle around 18. Who knows you're not? If you admit and confess and acknowledge just a regular human being with flaws and foibles, then you're building a real, sustainable, durable relationship, because that's who you really are, and that's who they'll see you when they get a mind of their own. But it's always easier to invest in the public sphere, because it's easy to wear a mask there and behave as someone you're not, and because you get a lot of admiration and title. I remember the first day, if I could have a world in which I didn't have to be called rabbi, do you know how much I would appreciate that world? Because titles get in the way. Titles create false inflation and false inflated identity. You can hide behind titles rather than... Remember my first day, I came into yeshiva. The first day working in yeshiva, 1995. My first day as a rebbe. Boy came over to me and said, Rebbe, I have a question. Let's sit out. I have a training for this. I'm on my sleeves. First pitch, opening pitch. Yes, what's your question? He said, what does the Rebbe think about? Like, I stop lunch across the table, grab him by the neck and say, if you ever talk to me in third party again, I'll, you know, rip you a new one. Not really, but like I wanted to. He's like, third party, I'm just a you. I'm not a he. I'm not a third party Rebbe. I'm just a regular person. Stop calling me by third. And then I realized that some boys need to call me that. So I realized I just sit and take it and absorb it. But I don't want to be a third. One of the most famous Reb Lichtenstein stories ever. You heard it, someone told it, when did I hear it recently? About Rav Aaron sitting in the front of the base medrash, and there's another boy named Aaron, and Aaron's friend said, Aaron, what time is it? Or Aaron passed the sefer, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein turned around and said, it's 5:30, or here's your sefer. You never heard that story? Titles and flights. Okay, we need titles. You need to be called rabbi. Because it creates gravitas, and it creates symbolism, and it creates self. You have to suffer. It's occupational hazard. You need to be called doctor, because you're in the hospital, you don't want the janitor coming and performing surgery. You want the doctor. So we identify people. Sometimes titles are absolutely necessary, but sometimes titles are not, and people search them and seek them and pursue them, and you shouldn't. I always laugh to myself when I see the following nameplate on a door. Joe Smith Esquire. Why? I'm like, because you want a title? What does Esquire mean? Why do I have to call yourself Esquire? Why is that important? Just be a person. So the public sphere showers us with admiration, inflates our character, allows us to hide behind masks. Why do you think so many people, sadly, have extramarital affairs with people at work? Because at home, you're nothing. At home, you're a garbage collector and a diaper changer and a floor cleaner, and everyone screams at you and everyone laughs at you. And then you get to work, and you've got all these young women dancing on your every word, giving you coffee, sharpening your pencils, ordering your... It really massages your ego. It's really good to think. So, of course, where would you prefer? The world where you're a shmageggy, where no one really cares about you, the world where everyone trampings you as a prince. But you know what? The world of home is the real world. That's called reality. That's called substance. That's called content. Everything in the outside world, you don't really know who people are. You put your best foot forward. You don't really... The world of your family, of your children, of your wife, that you can't control, but you can certainly shape more. The public sphere, you can't really shape. You do your best. You pitch in. You make an effort. The world. So here's my Chayasar challenge to you. 20 years down the line, will you have the internal strength and the confidence of self to make sure whatever your balance is, everyone's calculus is different, but whatever your balance is, not to ignore the quiet realm of Rosh Hashanah Yachid while you're enticed and seduced by the public fanfare of Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. And be careful, because there's going to come a point really early on. We're going to be asked to sign your name on a dotted line. And you're seeing zeros dancing in your head. If I sign my name on this dotted line, I get a lot of zeros at the end of my salary. Or if I sign my name on this dotted line, I get a lot of prestige and a lot of cover, and a lot of people thinking I'm great. But you may be signing away your family. maybe signing yourself to a job or to, and there's no simple solution. I'm not telling you you shouldn't take that job, because I know a lot of people that do work in high-paced, intense jobs, and they find their time for the family. It's not a question of which job you take. It's a question of what you prioritize. And this is a lesson that Rav Lichtenstein hammered home to us, primarily through his behavior. Because I lived through Rav Lichtenstein's life as a father, and just saw the dedication. And you know, the most important time in our relationship as a Talmud and a Rebbe, it's going to sound strange. The most important time, I want you to mark this time, is not 8:30 when I start Machshava before Shir, or 8 o'clock when I start, or Shabbos, or the Tish, or the Old City, or now. Most important lesson I could ever give you is 7:30 at night when you see me leave the Beis Medrash. Because I could be a great Rebbe and stay all night and talk to you until 2 in the morning. But 8 o'clock I should be at home. Now, some people should be in the Beis Medrash because they're home during the afternoon. And that's the difference in the Beis Medrash at night. Because that's when I'm entering Parshas Chayisa. New home with my kids, and living with my kids, and spending time with my wife, and being at home. I mean, everyone has simple calculus. It's not in the basement, it's no problem. I'm just giving you vivid examples to make it real. I'm not saying that anyone that deals in that, but everyone has to face that challenge. And it's so enticing to run to Rosh Hashanah Rabbi. And it's so enticing to go after the honor, and go after people who build up your ego, and adore you, and admire you, and clap, and applause, and now he doesn't get any of that, but that's real, and that's sneers, and that's quiet, and that's content, and that's earning your identity through real experience, not based on the masks that people think you're wearing. I would hope that if you come to my house, you'd see the same me. That's called integrity. I'm not trying to wear any masks, but still, I have a title, and I have a role, and I have none of that. At home, in my private, my friends, I just have to earn who I am, not based on pre-expectations or what I'm associated with. Yeah, I'm associated with yeshiva. I have a job in yeshiva. You assume that reflects a certain level of trust in me. And you're listening to my statements based on that trust and based on this. And all that's none of that. In my private realm, it's just based on who I am. You have to earn my identity and build relationships. So be careful. Be very, very careful to equalize. Be very. That's why there's an entire parsha with Moshe, 65 psukim about nothing, and then another 20 psukim about more nothing. Eliezer is very, very elongated. Eliezer's story is very, very outsized and very bloated. But you know what? That first story is also pretty bloated. It takes about 20 psukim for him to buy a little piece of land. I told you, I could summarize Parshas Chayisara basically in 4 psukim. He buries Sarah, finds a wife for Yitzchak, marries another woman, dies and is buried. Those are the 4 pretty boring events that take place in Chayasara, and it's a huge parsha. Because the Torah is delivering a message. This is important as well. It's not just the drama, not just the angel, not just the career, not just the ambition. What's important is Chayasara. Your home, your wife, your children, your family, your private realm. And go find that balance. It's part of your Avodas Hashem. 2 people in Sefer Bereishis are called Tzaddik. Noach, and Al-Pi Chazal Yosef. No one else. Not Avram, not Yitzchak, not Yaakov. And the only 2 experiences they share, they're in different eras, different periods, and they both feed the whole world. Yosef feeds the whole world during the famine, and Al feeds the whole world in the day. So you want to be a tzaddik? Here's your route to being a tzaddik. Start with the low. Start with the basic. Get a degree. Become a professional. Raise your family the right way. Invest in your children, not in your screens. Pay attention to your wife. Give them the middos and the values that are important. And then on top of that, build the next level. On top of that, contribute to your society. On top of that, build your community. On top of that. But even if you never reach the on top, you never reach that next layer, here's the challenge, okay? Are you prepared to end your life without having accomplished anything in the public sphere, but knowing that you changed the world solely through the family you raised and the people that whose DNA you share that you've created in this world? That's a heroic life. I'll share something really private with you. I don't even have shared. Those are the Shurim I've given before. When I made Aliyah in 1993, I didn't have a job. No one was offering me a job. A little fun fact of history, I actually interviewed in Shalom Inn for a job. No jobs. And boy, did I have red carpet opportunities in America. I mean, great jobs, plum opportunities, best jobs you can imagine for a young rabbi. And in my heart, you look back at it, well, Baruch Hashem, I have a job. I look back at it, I was prepared mentally. to tell myself that if I move to Israel, raise my family in Israel, in the way that I want to, with Yerushalayim and B'nai Torah, and marry them and get them settled, I will go to my grave a happy man. Whatever else happens, it will or it won't. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision. But I know what the baseline is, what the core is, what the foundation is. And you think headlines change the world. They really don't. Headlines are headlines. People pay attention. Don't mistake attention grabbing for real change. Headlines don't change the world. Politicians come and go. I promise you in 100 years, the name Lichtenstein, 500 years, will mean a lot more than Trump. Right now, there's a lot of headlines, a lot of hubble. It won't change anything. His predecessor, successful, will come, it'll reverse all these decisions. It'll be an asterisk. It'll be a cartoonish figure. It'll lampoon him. But if Akiva was talked about 2,000 years later, if Lichtenstein was talked about in 500 years. And I remember reading an article about 15 years ago about a man in Mea Sharim who died. And when he died, he had about 1,200 blood descendants. Not marriage, blood descendants, children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Just do the math, 20 times 20 times 20. You have 20 children, and they have 20 children, and they have 20 children. You get up there pretty quickly. And I don't think it was 20 times 20. It was funny, but it was pretty high. And between the time he died and between the time he was buried, there were 3 brises and 2 bar mitzvahs and 3 bas mitzvahs and 4 weddings just in his family. So think about how much of a change you can make in this world just if you remain within the private sector, just if you remain within Shoseach, just your wife, your family. Think about how many people you can directly impact. Directly, through values, through ideas, not necessarily in public sphere. So be careful. No one's shutting down your ambition. Develop it. It's a tool Hashem gave you. It's a trait Hashem gave you. But balance it out. Don't ignore your private responsibilities. Don't ignore the Rishon Seyach. Don't be lopsided. Don't end your career in Parshas Vayera. Make sure you segue into Parshas Chayisara. Make sure. At that juncture, where Avram is not there as Sarah dies, is symbolic. He's not there because he's shaping history. He can't be in two places. And then he recovers, compensates, and restores the balance. Okay, how much time do we have? Okay, we may get to 3 topics tonight. Second topic. Avram is worried. Avram is concerned. Avram wants to convey the gravitas of the situation to his Eved. This is not something I take lightly. It's something you should take lightly. So he actually asks his Eved to swear. I know that you trust me, and I know that I trust you, and I know that I can count on you. We've been together for all these years. You're honest and loyal, but I want to lock it in with an obligation. I want you to lock it in and make it up. This is not to insult you, but I know that in the moment, you'll be in some dark alley in Aram. You'd rather just throw in the towel and come back and let her marry your daughter. You'll find your mind will play tricks on you. Sometimes in life, guys, it's really important. I'll talk about this in Parshas Vayechi. It's important not just to operate based on values, but based on commitment. I talked about it a little bit in Vayera. Because values melt in the heat of the moment, but commitments and obligations don't. So I now the 3rd week of Charev Zman, and I've decided Minyan is really important. I'm going to come to Minyan every day at 7 o'clock. Yeah, tomorrow at 6:45, it may not be so compelling. As opposed to saying, it's now the 3rd week of Charev Zman, and people are flying by me, and I know Minyan is important. That's it. I'm sitting there on obligating myself to go to Minyan. Sometimes boys who are going back to America, or to England for that matter, and they want to lock in their learning, and they're not in a learning environment, they ask me for advice. It sounds a little bit childish, but it works. I say, on a day that you don't learn, fine yourself. What does that mean? You owe money. Just take $2 and give it $5, give it to the stock. Or you have to make up the time. Because unless you create accountability, it just slides. It's just, right? Just one day leads to the other, leads to the other. That's the beauty of Daf Yomi. The train keeps going. And if you want to keep up with the train, you can't miss a day. And if you miss a day, you pay for it on the next day. Miss 2 days, you pay triple on the 3rd day. So even if you're not learning Daf Yomi, find a way. Just say, I'm going to give. Again, it shouldn't be something minuscule, because then it's a joke. 25 cents, it's not, it can't be something exorbitant, because you don't really have that much money. You can take it out of your parents' account. But just something. I don't know. I don't want anyone to act unhealthy, but just tell yourself, I'm not going to eat dessert tomorrow. I'm not going to eat a sweet or something. Something that hurts. Something that takes a bite out of you. Not too bad. You don't know. I'm not going to sleep for 3 days, because you need your health. Remember, when I came back, I was just counseling one of the voices going back. When I came back to YU, I realized I can't have it all. I can't relax, enjoy, socialize, work on my academics, and also learn as much as I need. Something has to give. I can't just... I decided I'm not going to eat lunch for my college career. I ate lunch, but it wasn't in the cafeteria, relaxing, with a play, talking. It was all really good and fine. I realized I just need that hour. So just take that hour for lunch and take this time for dinner. Take this time. It's just, I'm not going to get anywhere. So for my college career, which lasted about 10 minutes, 3 years, my college career was just really quick. I would take a bagel and eat over a sandwich. Two bagels or whatever, a bagel for lunch, a bagel and a drink, and that was my learning time. So at some point, you're not gonna learn with comfort. If you just learn, I do or I don't, at some point you have to have accountability to yourself. At some point you have to create a mechanism of accountability, a mechanism of struggle, a mechanism, or else it's not gonna happen. So Avram's creating that mechanism. Avram is asking, demanding Eliezer take it off. Because I know that as committed as you are right now, in Aram, things go south, gets confusing, you're in a foreign land, you don't speak the language, camels are thirsty, you just hightail it back and you come with some other solution. But he wants to consider how serious he is about this to Eliezer. So he says, Sinna yadcha tachas yirechi. I want you to put your hand on my thigh and take a shvua. Why does he put his hand on Avram's thigh? Because when you take a shvua and you make a commitment, you're supposed to hold a Sefer Torah to show gravitas, to show reverence, to show meaning. Avram didn't have a Sefer Torah, so he chose the next best thing. He only had one mitzvah-associated object, and it was that part of his body. So to convey that gravitas, he said, Eliezer, put your hand there. Put your hand there, and we all know what, you're putting it on my knee, but it's associated, it's proximate to the meaning. Why? Avram could have chosen something else. So the Medrash says he chooses Mila because there may be other mitzvahs that are symbolic. I could show you my sitter that I daven for stone with, maybe Avram had a sitter. I could show you the leftover trinkets or souvenirs from the Bris Ben Abisar. Maybe Avram took a few rocks. Here's the knife from the Akedah. It's in a showcase. Avram had whatever, you know. Maybe the antlers of the Ayel. You know, it was an Ola, so I can't really use the antlers. Something, you could have shown him a lot of different souvenirs. But put your hand next to the mila. Why? The matter says, Sin nayadcha tachas reichi, source 2. Amar brachia, levisha nitna lehem bitzar. This is a mitzvah I suffered for. The akedah was hard, but it ended up easy. The bris ben absara, and that was a walk in the park. Mila, I was 99. They didn't perform surgery on my nose. It hurt. There was no anesthesia. I was chugging whiskey and biting down on a stick like in the old style. It was painful. But because it was painful, I cherish it more than any other mitzvah. Look at the Lashon Chazal. L'fisha nitna lehem bitzar. L'ficha chi chaviva. This is a mitzvah I cherish. If you're holding an akedah souvenir, maybe you don't know how serious I am. This is something. This is the most precious aspect, the most precious mitzvah. Guys, you got to break that culture of ease in life. Choosing easy experiences, fun experiences. It's now Hanukkah time. Rabbi, I have this major crisis. I don't find learning fun. I thought that I'd come to yeshiva and in 2 months I would morph and I'd find learning fun. It's not fun. Here's a newsflash for you. It will never, ever, ever happen. You can spend shana mem in yeshiva. It won't happen. Because you've been hotwired for fun. And fun is pleasant, relaxing, joy, barbecues, brides, camps, swimming, sports, movies, TV. But here's the good news. You can swap in something for fun, and Torah will be back. You just have to learn how to swap it in. And you know what it's called? It's called meaning. And that's a choice you have to make in life, and you have to start conditioning yourself to choose between fun and meaning. And if you choose fun, you'll have neither. If you choose meaning, you'll have both, because you'll learn to enjoy meaning. But it takes switching your wires a little bit. Let me give you an example. A movie is fun. The car scene, special effects, the cinematography, it's fun. It tilts your heart. You enjoy when your heart starts beating faster. Sports is fun. The drama, the tension, the anxiety, the... There's no meaning. A couple hours after the movie, you're left with nothing. I promise you. It was after the sports match, you're left with nothing. A lot of these post-movie interviews. What do you think about that movie? Oh, that movie changed my life. Gut and him. That movie changed your life? What was your life like before it? These are scripts. Reprocessed scripts written by high school dropouts masquerading as Hollywood producers. There's nothing in them that should change your life, I promise. You can get more out of just opening up a random page in Shakespeare and reading five lines in five movies. There's any random page in a well-written novel. You don't go to a movie for media. They're all binary, black and white, simplistic, predictable. I can tell you what's going to happen in 95%. Oh, Rabbi, what about Inception? A dream within a dream! Oh, my God! Oh, I never would have thought of that. The person who dreamed about himself dreaming, oh. That's new. Books are filled with metaphors, subtlety, complexity, life, relationships, individualism, depth, struggle, challenge, age. A dream within a dream. That's what it comes down to. That's a very funny, strange choice. It's legitimate to go to movies. It's legitimate to go to watch sporting events. It's legitimate to unwind. But can you be silent? Just enjoy his meaning. Wow. When's the last? Just try to think about the last experience you had, hopefully today, a couple hours ago. Hopefully this, that you walk away, wow, I have meaning. There are ideas expressed in this hour that will shape me, that I'll think about, that I'll use, that I'll employ, that I'll. Tools, ideas, words, movement, passion, ideal, whatever you pick up. That's called meaning. Sometimes when I don't have meaning, I feel like I'm thirsty, I'm choking. I need to give me some meaning. So I'm going from station to station. Meaning, fine. Let me have some meaning. That was the ultimate meaning, because it's eternal. Meaning in this one, meaning in the next one. But meaning is tough. And the more the meaning, the more difficult the experience. Why do you think learning Torah Shema Peh is so difficult? Because you're trying to decode the will of Hashem. And that's always like wrestling a 300-pound gorilla. You're always going to lose. Because you're facing off against a Kodesh Baruch Hu, as it were. And that's always going to be difficult. It's always going to be confusing. It's always going to be, and the more the level of difficulty, the closer you are to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, by definition. You're passing in Tanakh, it takes you 5 minutes. You speech it. What do you really know? These old generalities, stories. I'm not in any way diminishing the importance, but... Look at how many ideas you're uncovering by sifting through Cheskas Habatim and what Bailus is and what character and what Macha and how it is. And sifting through, drowning. If you told me I could swim a lap and I had a choice, I'm either going to swim a lap in an Olympic sized pool, I'm going to swim a lap in the Atlantic Ocean. Put a boat in Manchester, another boat 100 yards away, and you go swim. I would choose the Atlantic Ocean every minute, same volume of water, but I'm in the Atlantic Ocean. Swimming in the Atlantic Ocean, what does that mean? Well, anywhere. Atlantic Ocean. So you gotta get past that threshold, guys, in life and in yeshiva. Don't walk in difficult experiences. Easy come, easy go. Things that are easy for us, we take for granted, they don't bear in our soul and shape us. Which experiences in life have shaped you? The answer may be none. Which is fine. That's part of being a kid, which is you go from station to station. You don't really shape yourself personally. You get shaped by your context, by your structure. All of a sudden, you become an adult, you're trying to shape yourself. It's the struggle. You know what shaped me? 6 months trying to bust my brains listening to Rav Lichtenstein's Shir Chloe, trying to understand what those Shirim were like. I mean, I would stay up till 2 in the morning with a tape recorder listening to line by line. I felt like an idiot. Because each week I maybe understood 3 or 4 more words, but I knew that I was about to unlock one of the greatest personalities of my generation. If I had not undergone that process, I'd still be a pauper, I'd still be impoverished, I'd still be shrunk. And this was unleashing me. I remember those experiences. I remember the difficult times in my relationships that shaped the relationship. I remember the difficult times for Tara. I remember the times I had to sacrifice. If you ask me, what was my best mom? It was Summer's mom, because I sacrificed. And many of my friends love, but I sat. It's the sacrificial moments that shape us, because we have to spend part of ourselves in order to acquire it, and that shapes us. Free lunches don't shape us. We come and we go. If we pay for something, we give up our hard-earned resources, time, effort, tranquility, that those experiences shape. So Avram tells Eliezer, I don't want you to hold a kid a knife. I want you to hold the Ben Abbasar souvenir. I want you to hold my foot, think about my milah, and think about what I went through. And I'm deadly serious now, because this is the most important incident in my life. When I think about the Akedah, when I think about the milah, I remember how hard it was. I remember how much I suffered. I remember the pain. I remember the suffering. And I don't want you to lock into that. I never want you to be serious. We have 3 minutes. I know this is really quick, but I just want to get one more idea. So I'll stop here on a dime. I'll stop here quickly. I mean, how do I build my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How do I make Hashem more tangible? That's what we're here for. How do you bring Hashem into the room? I told you so many times. Part of what Rav Aaron and Rav Amichal did for us, they brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the room. How do I bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the room? Because that's the end point. That's the goal. Oh, you just Davin, Eretz Yisrael, Tara, Chesed, Borat. I mean, there's so many high-minded, powerful ideas. But if it's a recurring theme in this year, it's the high can't stand without the low. And sometimes don't be too smart for yourself. Don't outsmart yourself. Don't think too much. Also, learn how to do things that regular people do that aren't well-read thinkers or thinkers, right? Thinking will get you just so far. So it's also about conditioning and activities. So here's a bit of advice. Read this week's parsha. Read through the circle. I'm just going to talk extemporaneously because we have 2 minutes. And notice the one word in these 65 sukkim, Mashiach, that dominates. There are many words. Shliach, Darki, Nara, Chesed. What interesting words, Avram. The one word that dominates is the amount of times Eliezer says Hashem's name. He's constantly talking about Hashem. Every talking about Hashem. That word Hashem. You think this is Parshas Yisro? It is. It's Parshas Vayisar. This is Eliezer. This is the Rosh Hashanah. And that same phenomenon occurs. The other reason I want to mention it out because it occurs in Parshas Vayesha. Not the real relationship, like that, the Shiro in the States. So how did Yosef's master know that Hashem was written by Yara the Nakhi Hashem? He tells Parsha by Yeshua, right? He says, Shem Shemaim Shalom Bethe. So let's talk about Hashem. And looking at Parsha by Yeshua, you'll see within that little section. So here's an easy way to make Hashem more present. Just say his name a lot. Say, Mez Hashem, Bezos Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Just say it a lot. That seems, oh, come on, that's for school kids. That's not for the thinker. I'm a thinker. I read Rabbi Soloveitchik's book about Hashem, about Adam 1, Adam 2, and I learn Hashem's Torah. That's for bubbies, and that's the secret of life. Can you be a bubby and a brisker at the same time? Good phrase. Put that down. If you're a brisker and a bubby, and you're not getting far. There are a lot of bubbies that sit to hell in their whole lives and sit pretty close in Shemayim Kaddish Park, but there are a lot of briskers that maybe didn't reach them. Can you be a bubby and a brisker? Can you say Tehillim? Can you say Baruch Hashem? Now, I know the problem. I know what you're thinking in your minds. So let me just cut you off at the pass. Let me preempt that concern. There's some people who thread their language with so many Baruch Hashems that the whole sentence collapses. When it comes to midnight, Baruch Hashem, Be'ezus Hashem, B'li'ayin har, B'li'nedar, Be'ezus Hashem, I'll come and say to you. Okay, so don't get to that level. I know how to speak English also. I come from Brooklyn, but I know a little better English. Okay, I know how to speak it also. It's a pretty good language. Okay? Your sentences can still be elegant, they can be well-structured, they can be powerful, they can still be articulated clearly, but you'd be surprised if you train yourself with proper ratios. I'm not saying the sentence you have three. Here's a rule, okay? Don't say Hashem's name more than twice in a sentence. That's probably going to weigh down the sentence. Unless you're saying Yerkim Omidos and say 13 times. But outside of Yerkim Omidos, okay, up to 2 is fine. More than 2, consult with me afterwards. PM me and I'll give you some examples. And finally, just as a good 1 or 2 is pretty good. As Hashem, I hope they come. The Mirtz Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem's will, and also, this is a pet peeve of mine, you may agree or disagree, I don't like the name Hashem more than I like the name God. Because that's the way we refer to him. He's a Hashem, he's a Kodesh Baruch, he's a Rabbi Shalom. Then you get into that God place, and you hear about God, and the God here, and the God here, and the God the war, and the God, and the God, and the God. Come on, look. If that's your God through place, fine, but bring it into the place of Medrash. Bring it into our world. And that's not as adamant about that as the frequency. And if you feel, thank God, and please God, and with God's help, that's just as fine, because it's just words, and Hashem is a moniker, it's not Hashem's essential name. But if you want Hashem to be present in your life, then don't be afraid to say, sometimes, like how many of you went through high school learning a lot about Judaism, but not really talking about Hashem that much? How many times has Hashem spoken about? How many times did you hear that you should say? I remember as long as I say this very quickly, there was once a Rebbe of mine I was very close with in NYU. It's a very, very different world. More big black hat, big white long Bekashir with a darkle, spoke in Yiddish. He was in Avon, I went to visit him. You'd be surprised how palpable Hashem was in that room. He was probably discharged on every other word was Hashem, Hashem, the Abishta, the Abishta, which is Yiddish for Hashem, the Abishta, the Abishta, this, the Abishta, that. And it probably wasn't. And I tried to deliver that lesson to my kids. Put a seat out for a Kodesh Baruch Hu at the table. Not literally, because I'd be paying this. Figuratively. Make sure, how many people are we setting up for tonight? We're setting up for 8. 8? Only 7 people. Kodesh Baruch Hu is coming also. Okay, don't put a table on the seat. That's a little paganistic. What about a Kodesh Baruch Hu? Think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Don't be afraid to, in general, don't be afraid to come across as too religious. Don't be afraid of too religious. If you care about religion, believe me, you can be cool enough and also be religious. Those don't contradict. Well, I want to be cool, if it's so cool. You're cool by whom you are. Trust me. You have to worry about mentioning Hashem too much and sounding too religious. And that's one of the lessons of the Sixth Parsha. Because as long as mentioning Hashem Baruch's name, I'll pick this up and I'll try to make it to myself. The three important messages. We should say after before we should say other. Number one. Number two, don't be afraid of meaning. Search for it. Number three, talk about Hashem in your language, you'd be surprised how powerful it becomes in your life. Let's go back.